Good morning. Did you know that the most important thing about you is that God loves you? He loved you to the cross and back. And part of his great love is that he gives you a life that matters. You never have to wonder, do I matter? Do I count? You are number one in God's book. And he gives you opportunities every day to live a life beyond yourself. I like to call it a legacy life. This is Sue Donaldson. As you listen today, ask God, show me how to spend today investing in people and your word, because both last forever. There's no better way to live. Hello, I'm so happy today to introduce you to my new friend, Kristen Holloman. Is that correct? Holloman?
Hollyann, yes.
Yeah, Hollyann, excuse me. And she is from Dallas. And she has come out with a new book in February, and I can't wait for her to tell you about it. She's a speaker, writer, and passionate about helping women redeem the pain of their past so that they can go on and grow up in Jesus, is what I'm thinking. Isn't that right?
That's right. Yep, that's exactly right.
Welcome, Kristen, and tell us a little bit about your family.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, we have lived in Dallas for about 5 years now. We were in Colorado before that.
Oh, that's why you don't sound like a Dallas chick.
Yeah, I might even sound a little Californian because I grew up in California.
Oh, where?
Orange County.
What town?
A lot of them. Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, Lake Forest, Foothill Ranch, Mission Viejo.
Oh, yeah. My brother's in Dana Point. That's why I know. And I'm from the
South. I love it.
I'm from San Luis Obispo, so we get down there as often as we can. That's wonderful. Okay, yeah. Dallas now, and yeah. Family?
Yes, my husband and I have been married for almost 18 years, and we have four kiddos. They're 6, 10, 14, and 16 now, so a little bit of a spread.
Yes.
We're staying busy in all the different stages.
So not to be too personal, but you got a second win there.
We did, yeah. We wanted them closer together, but that is just not how God decided it was going to be.
Yeah. My husband wanted only two, and that's not what God decided to be. Oh, well, when I told him I was pregnant at 43, I said, it's not my fault. And he said, take your vitamins. That's all he said. Okay. So I read that you and Sean do some premarital counseling. No one has ever asked us to do that. So I'm kind of impressed.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. We love it. And we're so passionate about it because we did not have any premarital counseling.
Oh.
And the first 10 plus years of our marriage could have been so much smoother if we had. Mm. And we just love taking these couples through all of the hard things that no one's really pushing them on and forcing them to think about and at least have conversations about. Mm. So it's really fun to dig in with them.
I call that probably one of the most important parts of mentorship, because when you're first married, you're all Google-eyed and you think everything's going to be perfect because otherwise you wouldn't have married them. In fact, I remember telling my friends that I was marrying someone who was a cross between Prince Charming and Jesus. And my married friends, one in particular, rolled her eyes. And I thought, how come she's rolling her eyes? Because it's true. And yet you really want to be able to tell someone, hey, this is a lot harder than I thought, without dishonoring your partner. So the fact that you're kind of like a depository for people's aches and pains and able to steer them on the right direction.
Yeah, it's a privilege for sure.
It is a privilege for sure. Four kids, that's great. You've been mentoring women for quite a while. What's been your favorite part?
Honestly, it's seeing the other side of pain. It's seeing the redemption and seeing them start to walk in some freedom, and maybe for the first time, what it feels like to not be so bound by the pain and wounds of their past, and get some new skills so they can navigate the, you know, everyone has hard things in life, but we just need the tools to process them well. And we need someone to come alongside us and sit with us in it. Mm-hmm. And so doing that for people has been a real honor.
How would you, what does it look like when you say to see a woman on the other side of pain? What,
yeah,
when you say walk in redemption, those are beautiful words, but what does it mean? Mm-hmm. What does it look like?
I know for me, it looked like finding my voice. And I think that's true for a lot of women. If you weren't raised in a house where your voice was heard and respected, you didn't feel seen, then it's harder to develop that as an adult in this noisy world that is everyone's clamoring for attention and everything is so divisive. To know how to speak up and when to speak up and do it effectively, I think is a skill that can help us overcome a lot of the pain that we've endured. And I know for me, learning other things in therapy that I've done about attachment, things that happened really early on in our life, and how they're playing out now, and how we constantly have reactions based on our attachment or lies that we've believed from shame creeping into our stories. All of these play out into our like small everyday decisions that end up adding together to make a really big impact. So when we can start making new choices, we can stop screaming at our kids. We can start using words of affirmation and edifying our husband. We can stop being so afraid that everyone's going to leave us and be a little bit more vulnerable and real in our relationships.
Those
I
are
think,
all really, really, really big steps, and I can't
yeah,
imagine that they happen overnight. When you
no.
first mentioned feeling seen and finding your voice, those are catchphrases now. And so I think it's important to define what you mean. But I did think of a neighbor I had over last week who grew up with some a lot of dysfunction, actually, she would admit. And she said the last time she was home, like in her family of origin, her brother noticed that she had come out of the kitchen to be seen, and that she could talk without rancor, and that he mentioned it to her. You used to sit in the kitchen, and I couldn't believe that she would, because she's so lovely now. You know, she knows Jesus now, but it's been a long time coming where she feels like, wow, I'm secure because I'm a child of God, and I can leave off the past, what I was raised with. And so she's making a difference now, even in our own family. I just think it's so sweet. So how would you define finding your voice?
For me, it's been about believing that I have something to say that matters to other people's lives.
For example,
Well, I think I was afraid to really say anything. I felt like I was unwanted, like a nuisance, like I just believe all the lies that the devil was whispering in my ear. Like, they don't want to hear what you have to say. It doesn't matter. They're not going to believe you. You're just going to annoy them. And so, believing that I can just speak up at all was a huge game changer for me. And being able to just stand in the confidence, like reminding myself, like, God gave me these words. And you know what? If they come out all wonky, that's fine. He's going to use it anyways. And I don't have to be perfect to be worthy. And my worthiness is not based on their reaction. And so I am allowed to speak up. He wants me to speak up. I started to see what it was like, what it was costing me to not speak up.
For
And
example.
it was costing me friendships. I was not going deep enough to really hold on to friendships. And it was also showing up in my kiddos. They were not doing a good job speaking up for themselves when they were at school and had a problem with a teacher, or they were having a problem with a friend, or my daughter was at dance class and someone didn't treat her poorly. They would just back off and not say anything because I think they were too used to their mom doing the same thing.
This reminds
And
me of something that Philip Yancey has written. Perhaps you have heard it too, the phrase breaking the chain of ungrace, which is all about what we were raised with or we weren't raised with. I talk about it when I speak on hospitality, because some people are immobilized in opening their home because they weren't raised with it, which was my mother, but she broke the chain of ungrace so that all the more kids were. You know, we didn't even know mom had gone through that, you know, but she determined to break that chain, and that's what you have done and are doing for the sake of your children, which I think is so beautiful because that is our legacy. Tell us the name of your book and how you came about writing it.
The book is called Legacy Changer, and I I wrote it because it took me many, many years of talk therapy, trauma therapy, mentorship, countless workshops, like just so many years to resource myself with the tools that I needed to heal and enough knowledge of what the Bible had to say about all of my painful past and where I should be headed, that I wanted women to be able to have this toolkit all in one place. And for somebody who hasn't started a healing journey at all, maybe even having a hard time figuring out, like, do I have things that I need to do differently than my family did? Do I have pain that needs healing? What are some of the signs that maybe I have pain that needs healing? What are some of the signs that it's actually trauma that I went through? And what can I do about it? I wanted that all to be in one place.
That's a beautiful thing. And of course, you've seen how God has redeemed your pain by you being able to offer this. So it's such a great thing. But I like it that some people will probably don't even realize that they need your book. But if you say right at the outset, what are the signs? Do you have something on your website that would say I need, that would help them say, oh, maybe I need this information?
That would be really great if I did, but I do not.
Well, by the time this comes out, maybe you will. But
yes.
If you just put, here, I'm giving you advice. If you put like three things to show that you might, it might even be something that they could pass on to a friend and then they realize, oh, I'm the one who needs it.
Yeah,
I
that's
find
really
that
great.
I think that's true with me. It's like, oh yeah, this person needs it. No, the Lord is saying, I need it.
Yes.
Are you able to share without going into too much detail some of the trauma so that just as vulnerable as you want to be in a minute or two?
Yeah. What I used to think of as trauma is very different than what it actually can be. So I used to think it's like, you know, you're involved in a mass shooting, or you were a soldier at war, or a huge car accident, like some big major event. And so I thought, you know, what I've gone through is not that bad. I'm fine.
Right.
Yeah. But really, so that's like what therapists would call big T trauma, those big major events. But little T trauma is akin to death by a thousand paper cuts. It's when we are getting bullied, or we're living in a house in poverty, or our parents are constantly fighting, or we're watching abuse unfold in front of us, or there's emotional neglect. Our emotional, mental needs aren't being met. Shaming is happening on a daily basis. It's those little things that happen over and over. And not just things that happen, it can be things that are not happening, like needs that you have as a child that are just going unmet. When those things compound and we don't have a way to understand those things when we're a child, and nobody's really offering us any comfort or care to process those things. And we also have a lack of agency. We don't feel like we have any choice but to endure it. And that kind of goes along with not feeling like I had a voice.
So you would say then, because you used we, you never said I. So have all these things happened to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All those little T trauma things.
I would never call them little, but
yeah,
I
but
guess that's the
therapists
technical
speak.
form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because people experience PTSD and they have no idea that's something what they might consider small. I also think some people can have a distortion of what's happening to them when it's really not happening to them. So I guess that would come out in therapy.
Yes. Yeah. Trauma has a really good way of having us dissociate, like as a means of survival. Our brain's like going somewhere else so we can endure whatever's happening. And so what the neuroscientists have found is that that really breaks up our memories. And so if you're someone that's like, I just don't remember a lot of my childhood, that could be because you were coping with a lot of pain and that was the way you were surviving. And so doing story work and like putting my life out on a timeline and filling in absolutely everything I could remember, my brain started to bring up things that I didn't know I could remember, both painful and good things. And it was doing that story work that I was like, I can see how even when I was not a believer, that God was with me this entire time and protecting me.
Let me ask you this. How old were you when you became a believer?
I was 19.
Okay. And how old were you when you decided I needed to start some deep soul work?
Came in two stages. The first one was between our second and third kiddo, we lost a baby. And I was not coping well. And growing up in my house, anything to do with mental health or counseling was like super shamed. But I was like, at least I'm going to be a fool that's getting help because I can't cope anymore.
Well, let me clarify. Growing up in your house, meaning when you were raised, not with your husband.
Yes. When I was
There's a
raised.
difference. Okay.
For
So you
sure.
weren't going to go get help because that shows that you're less than.
Yes.
Okay. So, but the crises of the death of a child made you be brave. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Or
Well, more like
desperate?
desperate.
Desperate. There we go.
I felt like I had no other option. So I
Right.
went and then more quickly than I anticipated, went through the grief of losing the child, but then found out I'm here for a lot more than that because they kept bringing up my mom and kept bringing up my dad and kept bringing up all these things. And I'm like, why are we talking about? I thought we were here talking about the baby. But turns out God had bigger plans. So that was stage one of really starting to learn, like, I am unbelievably codependent and
What do you mean? What
hypervigilant.
do you mean by that?
Yeah. Always trying to anticipate other people's needs, especially my mom, and be three steps ahead of her so that there wouldn't be an opportunity for her to be stressed or for her mood to go off.
Or for her to hurt you.
Yep. And so that
are
was,
they still living?
yes, they are still living.
And do they know you're talking publicly about this?
They do. I have relationships with strong boundaries with both of my mom and dad, my dad less so. But I had to get to a place where I felt courageous enough to speak the truth that God had told me to speak, regardless of how it feels for other people who have not decided to enter into their own healing.
Are they believers?
My dad is not. He is an atheist. And my mom was raised Catholic and that hasn't formed the same, I think, relationship with Jesus that I have.
Well, that takes a tremendous amount of courage. And I wonder if she'll read your book.
I think she will.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
You asked the question on your website, will the cycle of pain in my family ever end? When we become a child of God, how come that pain is not immediately erased? Isn't God big enough for our pain?
Yeah, it took me a long time actually to realize that he was big enough for my pain and that I could come to him with it and he could handle it. But I think when we become a believer, we are justified. We are fully forgiven, but we're not sanctified. We haven't reached that fully healed spot until the other side of heaven. And so there's going to be pain. And he gives us tremendous resources to help deal with that and cope with it. And he's big enough to constantly take it over and carry it, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to experience it.
I think in Christian circles, even yet, even though it's far more open now than it was when I was little, there's still some shame involved in getting help. And yet there are so many support groups in churches, which are great because you need to talk about your pain and then see where you need to get some additional help. I remember my mom in her older years reading a book that was popular at the time called The Healing of Memories. And I thought, why does my mom need that? You know, I didn't know that she had memories that needed healing. She never told me because I was probably too shy to ask, but I feel like later when she got semi-dementia, she started talking about the hatefulness of her mother, which we never thought because we love grandma, right? So, you know, that's just interesting that a different generation, you know, she was willing more when she got older and bless her heart, you know, and of course she's completely healed now in heaven and which we'll all be. I just asked that question because some people are just cut and dry. And also when my brother got saved, he immediately was healed from taking marijuana and smoking. So when I think of those transformational things that can happen because Jesus laid his hands on him, people were saved. But other times it just takes work. And a friend of mine, I remember when her father died, she goes, oh no, he was the one who loved me. And so she went into therapy about her mom. And she told me it was got worse before it got better. Did you find that true? Why is that the case? I don't like that. I'd like to be fixed immediately.
I know. I think what I've learned through all the trauma therapy is that our body remembers so much more than our brain is actively remembering.
Wow.
And so your nervous system is like firing off as if all that pain is happening right now in this moment.
Oh.
And so it can be really, really hard to endure going through that, but it is the only way through it.
What are some introductory steps a woman can begin to take to change the legacy of her pain without giving away all the chapters of your book?
Yeah. For me, it was to handle the crisis mode I was in first.
What's that mean? What does that mean?
The crisis mode of my household meant I was out of control as a mom and out of control as a wife. I was yelling way too often. I was always operating like my baseline was up here. So any amount of stressor just like easily tipped me over the edge.
Okay.
And
It's like if you don't get a good night's sleep, the
yes.
next day, something that wouldn't bother you if you did have a good night's sleep just tips you. I mean, that's a very small example, but
yes.
Sleep has a lot to do with how I act. And I can't blame my sin on my lack of sleep. But on the other hand, it does make sleep is just so valuable. And that's why God gave us rest, right?
Yes.
So
sure.
That would be a good example. So to handle the crisis mode first. So to do that, someone would need to ask for help, most likely.
I had asked for help from my husband and start communicating my expectations and needs. We were not at all communicating our expectations to each other. And so getting on the same page was huge. And telling him more of my hurt, and the more he could understand my hurt, the more he had patience and grace for it and could say, "Hey, it looks like you're having a really off day. Are you really upset about your mom? Or are you really upset about whatever?" And then kind of create space for me to talk about that. And that was really healing.
But what about the woman who's listening, who's not married and doesn't have that support? What would be her step to cope? So your first one was to handle a crisis mode. What would she do?
Community is huge. So if it's not your husband, it needs to be somebody. It can be any human that can create the space and grace for you. But somebody to hold our truth. God created us purposely for each other and for community, and to isolate and to hold that pain, that's just like playing into exactly what the devil wants us to do, because he wants us to keep it in dark.
Yep.
And so when you bring it out into the light, it loses so much of its power.
Yeah. And you want to do that with a safe person. Who is in alignment with God's word. And and I find I can rush to relationships a little too quick before praying about being able to be vulnerable with that person. And then I have to back off. So just as an older, wiser, a person who's made so many more mistakes than you, I would say really pray about that space. And yet God surprises me too with wonderful, wonderful, godly women, younger than myself as well, who listen and empathize. We need someone to empathize. But we also need someone wise enough to steer us to truth about ourselves, our identity in Christ, and how much God loves us in spite of ourselves. Okay, one more step before we move on to the next question. One more step for someone who finds themselves, I'm reacting more than responding. What do I do next?
I had to quiet the lies that I was believing.
And how do you do that?
I started by just making a list of them. All of these yucky ways I felt about myself, and whether or not they're lies, like, let's just put them all out on a piece of paper. And now let's line them up with God's truth and see, like, is this a shame-based lie that I'm believing that's saying something that I am bad? Because the message from God is never that I am bad. It's maybe something I'm doing is bad. Maybe I'm stuck in a sin that's causing me pain, but I am not bad. And so I just wrote out those lies and combat them with truth.
Okay, great. Do you ever experience tugs to return to that pain that you were once stuck in? And how do you cope with that? Or are you just completely free?
I'm not completely free in terms of heartache, but I would say I'm increasingly free in terms of returning to the old coping mechanisms that just brought on more pain.
Which takes practice, and which is what you've been doing.
Yeah. And they take replacing them with something healthier, because you can't just decide, I'm not going to, you know, drink too much wine. I'm not going to overshop. I'm, you know, all these things that numb us. And like,
yes.
Okay, but what are you going to do when you're feeling like you want to do one of those things because you're hurting?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do instead that's going to replace that? Like, I'm going to get out and move my body. I'm going to call a friend and have a talk. I'm, you know, got to have a plan in place of what to replace those old coping mechanisms with.
Have a plan in place. That is so wise and smart. It's just practical. It's kind of like when I remember when a boyfriend broke up with me, and I knew that that weekend I would have nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So on a Monday, you make plans for the weekend. It's just putting a plan in place so that when you get off work, you're going, you're not crying the whole night. That was a long time
That's
ago, but
smart.
I still remember it.
Yeah.
And Kristen, I appreciate that you said, in terms of the heartache, it's not always gone. And I think one thing that God does, as we know in 2 Corinthians 1:3, that when we are comforted by God, then we are able to more easily and substantially comfort another, but with the comfort that God has given us. And so even though I don't like heartache, any heartache I've experienced, I know this is the truth for you, makes us more empathic. And the world needs our empathy. They don't need our condemnation. You know, the judge's job is Christ, not us. And we are to be empathic. And when I'm hurting, it makes me less judgmental and more loving like Jesus. So I'm sure,
yeah.
Not that I'm celebrating heartache, but I see its worth.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like to say that you can often spot hard life people that have been through hard things, because they do have a lot of empathy and ability to hold other people's pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're more drawn to them because they don't seem so perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not perfect. I had someone come in my house once and say, I feel better about my house. And I knew how dirty her house was. So I thought, I think that was a compliment, and I'm just going to take it like one.
Yes.
I was a gift to her that day.
Yes, you were.
Well, I was drawn to you because of the name of your book, Legacy. Tell me the name of your book.
Legacy Changer.
Legacy Changer. Is there a tagline?
Yes. Heal the hurt, redeem your story, create hope for your family.
Wow. Say it again.
Heal the hurt, redeem your story, create hope for your family.
Yeah, so good. And you know, this is a legacy podcast. I want to ask you my four questions. What legacy do you want to leave for those who know and love you?
One of love and radical acceptance of who God made my kids to be. My sister and I often felt like we had to fit a certain mold to be loved, or behave a certain way to be loved. And I have kids that are wildly different from each other. We have one kiddo on the autism spectrum and a couple kiddos with ADHD, one with hearing loss. We just have a lot of differences in our family. And it's just felt so good to radically love who God made them to be and not have expectations of them becoming someone different or someone that's more comfortable for me.
That is so good. Because we have built in expectations for our kids that we don't even know we have them, until they rebel a little bit and go, wait, I'm sorry about that. Didn't mean to
Yes.
do that. How are you doing that right now?
Teaching them to use their own voice and letting them know that it's okay to not be enough, because Jesus is. And we celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. Celebration was absent in our house growing up, but now we celebrate things big and small and cheer each other on and refer to ourselves as a team. And so creating that strong family identity that you belong here. Like, the world might be really rough out there, but inside here you are safe and you are loved.
So good. And if you haven't had that, that's just hard to start putting on. When I was single, I was with Wycliffe Bible Translators, and our director of the staff where I was working, he would, every time there was someone who had a birthday, he would have everybody just proclaim things about them. And his wife would make a list, and then we get to take the list home, and that was our present. And so when I finally got married, we do that for all of our birthdays. And so whenever there's a birthday, and my husband's very intelligent, but very quiet. So it takes longer for his verbal to come out. I make up for it in a bad way. But I'll warn him, like, say, you know, Bonnie's coming home for a birthday dinner tonight. Start thinking now what you're going to say. And then also, we're having a sibling reunion coming up where we get together every 2 years since our folks have passed away. And there's five of us, and only the spouses are invited, not the children, because we have all procreated like rabbits and there'll be too many. But we get together every couple years. And my brother, oldest brother, started this, that every meal, a different couple shares what's been going on. But the last thing that they share is an affirmation about their spouse. And so I wish we've written them down, because we've met four times and it's coming up. But the last time I go, honey, we're going to Arkansas in April. You have 4 months to think of something nice about me, because we all need to hear it, you know, and some were not raised with it. I don't know if his, you know, his folks dearly loved him, but they just were not very verbal. And it's just been such a joy then to see my kids do the same thing with their friends when it's their birthday. They make everybody go around and affirm. So what a great thing that you are celebrating your team. What challenge or obstacles, we may have already covered this, but if there's something else you want to add, did you have to overcome to be able to give and pass along this beautiful legacy?
I touched on that a little bit, but my unhealthy coping mechanisms and then getting my emotions in check. I had to learn that I was actually in charge of them. They weren't in charge of me. And I had to learn how to regulate them so that I was free to be a healthy mom and a healthy wife.
That's so good. I'm in charge of them. They were not in charge of me. I've sort of said that to my kid, like, she did not make you angry. You are getting angry all by yourself. They didn't like hearing that. And the first one, you said, I didn't get that one. Which,
Dealing with my unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Oh, that's it. That's a good one too. Yep. Like over shopping, overcompensating in some way.
Yep.
Dealing with unhealthy. I think we first have to realize that they're unhealthy. Maybe when we get our banking statement, we find that out.
And it's easy to excuse it, especially if it's something like exercise or whatever that could be fine in moderation.
Yeah.
But you're taking it way overboard. Then
way overboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can hurt a relationship where you're so determined to do something that you think is healthy. I'm thinking of someone who just over-exercised. Interesting you bring that up. And yet her husband felt left in the ditch.
Yeah.
There was not enough time for him because she was working on her body. So I wonder what kind of compensation that was going on. How does your life embody God's welcoming heart?
The biggest way is, I didn't tell this part of my story yet, but when I was in seventh grade, I started having Saturday night sleepovers at a friend's house, and her dad was a pastor and they were planting a local church in a high school. And so we'd go on Sunday mornings and set up all the chairs and get everything ready for the church service. And I'd sit and listen and had no clue what he was talking about, because I'd never heard the name of Jesus before. And my parents felt a little uncomfortable about me being there. So then I felt a little uncomfortable about my being there. But what really ministered to me then was how her family loved me and how her house felt was so radically different than how my house felt. That years later, fast forward to college, when I knew my life was out of control, but didn't really know what to do, I took myself to church because I remembered her family.
Wow.
And so now we're trying to model that in our house, that the kids that our friends bring, or the friends that our kids bring home, especially the difficult ones, like, have them over more. And we want to love these kids because we have no idea really what's going on in their house. And we don't know what big of an impact we can make by just including them in game night and including them for ride along to church, and just make them know that this is how a family can look.
That is so true. And that's something I speak about a lot with hospitality. When you invite, you don't really know their needs, but only God does.
Oh,
and
that's
you
good.
might I might even invite someone because I love them and I need them, but what God knows in their heart and in mine is supernatural, and I don't need to know. I don't need to know their need. And so what you're doing is blessing someone in a way that you might not know until glory. A friend of my daughter's didn't like chocolate. So when I knew she was coming, I made sure there were, you know, different things besides chocolate. She would go into the pantry on her own and bring out the little applesauce things that you get at the dollar store and just sit down and go through them all. And she still remembers that, you know, because her parents were going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And she didn't like chocolate. And I can make a pink lemonade cake. It won't kill me to not do chocolate. And
Yes.
so the what you're doing, and also your kids are going to remember this, and they're going to have such a different home because of what you are doing, Kristen. So thank you so much for sharing. We will
Yeah.
be giving away a copy of Kristen's book. Repeat the name again, please.
Legacy changer.
And the tagline.
Heal the hurt, redeem your story, and create hope for your family.
Wow. So this will be a great gift for yourself as well as for someone else. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a wonderful conversation and so encouraging.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Until next time, think about your legacy, the one God has called you to live, all for heaven's sake. I would love to speak at your next Christian Women's event. See my keynotes and retreat series, as well as the show notes from today's broadcast at welcomeheart.com. Thanks for coming. You're always welcome here.